Okay, councillors, can we get your attention then? So thank you, councillors. We're here tonight for a specially convened meeting and we're shortly going to be receiving a presentation from NI Electricity. We have with us this evening Rodney Ballantyne and Christine Kelly from NIE. I would ask councillors to try and keep their questions succinct, and as we normally do with these special council meetings, I'll try and get to every individual councillor at least once, but I would ask you to try and incorporate all of your views and your questions and opinions into that one session if possible. Just before we do start, can we take apologies, please, if there are any? Harry Harvey. Councillor Andrews. Sorry, say that again, Councillor Enright. Patrick Brown.
Councillor Fitzpatrick.
Okay, I also have apologies from Chief Executive Liam Hannaway, Councillors Patrick Clark, Willie Clark, Kate Loughran and Gary Stokes. Okay, Councillors, and David Taylor and Robert Burgess. Okay, Councillors, any declarations of interest to declare? Okay. Apology for Valerie Hart also noted. Just before we do proceed, councillors, I think it's only respectful and in keeping that we extend our condolences to the family of Liam Hannaway. Liam, our chief executive, can't be with us here this evening, unfortunately, because of death in the family. So we'd like to extend condolences to the Hannaway and wider family. I also want to take this opportunity to acknowledge that there was a horrendous attack here in Downpatrick over the weekend on an elderly woman in her home. And unfortunately, I had the occasion this afternoon, I had to go out and meet with her in her home. And I did so and presented her with a bunch of flowers on behalf of the council and on behalf of the people of the district. And to send on our best wishes to her. It's obviously a very distressing time for her, and I'm sure that you would echo those concerns. Okay, so we're going to proceed on then, councillors. I'm going to pass you over to Rodney Ballantyne, the Network Operations Manager in attendance here from NIE, and Rodney is going to take us through the presentation. Rodney, I hand it over to yourself.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for the opportunity to come here and visit you tonight and talk you through this brief presentation. What we're going to cover tonight, the structure of the industry and where NIE Networks sits, our preparations for winter, some information on the province-wide meter replacement programme that we're currently working through, how to connect to our network, how we work with councils and contractors and public realm schemes, and our work in the local community. I'll also touch very briefly on our investment programme for the next price control period, and we're happy to take questions at the end of the session. The electricity industry structure in Northern Ireland is now split across a number of different sections. Generation, number of generators, supply, a number of supply companies operating in Northern Ireland. And from 2007, you have the capability of choosing your electricity supplier. And this is the company from which you essentially get your electricity bill from. NIE Networks, we're the bit in the middle. We own and maintain the transmission and distribution networks, the network of substations, pylons, poles, lines and cables which bring electricity to your community. There's been some confusion in recent years as to what we actually do. So in September 2015, we rebranded ourselves to NIE Networks to try and bring across to customers that we have the responsibility for looking after the physical assets. So everything that you can see, that's what NIE Networks does. We're responsible for power cuts, for network maintenance and development, for meter reading, connecting renewables, and for connections. So if you want to build a new house, we're the people you come to. An overview of what we do. 850,000 customers. Our current price control period, March 2012 to September 17, we have £950 million provided from the utility regulator to spend on the network. We're slightly different from the other GB networks in that we're responsible for meter reading in Northern Ireland. So no matter who your supplier is, your meter gets read by NIE network staff. And just, we have 3.5 times more overhead network than the average of the GB DNOs. 1,200 staff. Winter preps. We have a close relationship with the Met Office, and their advice and their forecast predictions help us prepare for bad weather when it comes. Everybody in NIE has two roles, their normal business role and their storm escalation role. Over 1,200 staff, during escalations, those staff get mobilised into various operational areas, whether it's in local centres here or local centres, Ballinhinch, Maine, with one in Uri as well. The guys out in the field fixing the faults, and then 200 of our staff are call handlers, volunteers in our call centre in Craigavon. Preparing for the worst. Every year we complete a storm simulation. This year it was completed in October, where we basically proved the IT systems and our local resources and our internal processes to prove that we can cope with a major storm. We have arrangements in place for 4x4 vehicles and PDG helicopters in Scotland. Our emergency plan has been reviewed and updated. We have just sent out 5,500 letters to all the customers on a critical care register. And we review what's happened in previous storms to make sure we apply the learnings of what we're doing going forward. We can get access to other resources from ESB, our sister company in the Republic of Ireland, from other GB distribution network operators, third-party contractors, and we also have an arrangement in place with BT, Northern Ireland Water, Phoenix Gas, and ourselves in Northern Ireland to support each other during escalations. Our local incident centres, this slide shows the 12 local incident centres that we have across Northern Ireland, and we escalate these as and when necessary based on the extent of the damage or where the bad weather is. If you consider March 13, the last really big snowstorm we had in Northern Ireland, the east of the province was badly affected, the west of the province wasn't affected at all, so we moved all our resources from the west to the east. And I was talking to one of your councillor colleagues earlier, and he mentioned Sleeve Crib. We had guys from Enniskillen working on the faults in Downpatrick region back on March 13, in addition to the local guys. Restoring part of the community when it's safe to do so, and only when it's safe to do so, the emergency teams will go out and start repairing the faults. If there are wind speeds of 60-70 miles an hour, it's not safe for our guys to climb poles. So we have to wait until it's safer to do so. Some pictures there. There's a picture of a fault and carried off on March 13. How to restore power? The high voltage transmission networks, we have to get them back in first. Then the major power lines that serve a large number of customers, then back down to lines that serve smaller number of customers, and then down to one-off faults, LV network damage that's affecting one or two small numbers of customers. Going forward, we're about to start, and we have in some places started, a major meter replacement program. 225,000 meters to replace by 2017. We're replacing both credit and keypad meters. And contractors, KGM Electrical and MD Electrical, will be carrying out this work on our behalf. All the employees working on behalf of NIE Networks will carry identification, wear identifiable uniforms and drive marked vehicles. Initially, the contractors will visit people's houses and leave a card with a free phone number, which allows the customer to make an appointment to replace the meter at a time that suits them. It may take half an hour once we gain access to a customer's premise. It may take about 30 minutes to undertake the meter replacement. Making the connection. Currently, we connect about 8,000 customers each year to the Northern Ireland Electricity Network's infrastructure. The key to getting that connection is to make contact with us as quickly as and as soon as possible to allow any preparatory work to be done to allow you to get that connection as quickly as possible. We're the utility regulator makes us provide the least cost technically acceptable solution. So the quote that we give you will be the cheapest quote that we can provide you, that provides you with the requirements that you need. Renewable generation, almost 820 megawatts to date of renewable generation have been connected to date. We're updating our website and the connection documentation has been updated to ensure a more streamlined process for our customers. Public realm schemes. Lots of work happening right across the province in public realms. For each of these jobs, we'll have a project engineer attached to each public realm scheme, so there's a single point of contact, both the council and their contractors, and our relevant customer relations manager for this geographic area. It'll be Christine sitting beside me, so she'll be fully aware of all the schemes that are ongoing. In Newry, we currently have a system improvement load-related scheme in Warren Point. There's some underage replacement ongoing. We have tree maintenance ongoing, and various high-voltage overhead lines are being refurbished. In Banbridge, we're upgrading a substation at Milford Green. In Downpatrick, there's tree maintenance in Ballinahinch, Crossgar, Drumara and Arnsborough areas. We're upgrading Sol Street substation, and there's ongoing refurbishment of high-voltage overhead lines. In Ballinahinch, there's upgrade of substations in Churchview, Willmill Avenue and Eden Avari. In the community, Northern Ireland Electricity, you know, is currently 30 NE employees on board working with community organisations across the province. We're very strong into STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths, to encourage children, teenagers, to take a career in engineering to make sure we have the next generation covered. KidSafe, last year we attended primary schools and helped 20,000 school kids to understand the dangers of electricity. And we bring in apprentices and graduates each year. Each year we take in between 10 and 40 apprentices in a range of roles. We've recruited 28 graduates over the last 7 years and hope to recruit 7 new electrical engineering graduates per year for the next 5 to 10 years. And then, finally, price control. We operate within a regulatory framework whereby the utility regulator gives us an allowance to invest in the network over normally a 5-year period. We're currently in the middle of RP5, and this investment includes refurbishment of overhead lines, substation upgrading, cable replacement and tree cutting. We have recently undertaken a whole series of stakeholder engagement with representatives from the utility regulator, Consumer Council and DETI to gather feedback for business and domestic customers. And we will be introducing a Have Your Say section on our network, nienetworks.co.uk website, so that all our customers can give feedback as to what they would like to see the money spent on during RP6. And our plan will be submitted to the UER in June 2016. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the presentation. We're happy to take questions. Just a final point, as part of our winter campaign, you should all have received, or very soon, because they were posted at the end of last week, an elected representative's hotline number, which gives you the number to allow you access to our call centre, priority access to our call centre in Craigavon. So if anybody hasn't got it, give us a shout and we'll make sure you get one. But they were all posted. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rodney. Okay, councillors, I'm going to pass over to yourselves then. Councillor McGrath.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. It's always good to get the update. What I'd like maybe to discuss with you this evening is the the large supply of electric to the area that's required for businesses. There is a grid that is shown which shows the delivery of electric across Northern Ireland, and it's fairly evident that the southeast area is left without the adequate supply of electric to allow large factories to be able to open in the area. I don't know what the name of that specific network is. It the Sony
network?
It's the transmission network, and it's a very large electric that big businesses and factories need. And if we want to try and attract those type of industries into places like Downpatrick and the surrounding area, we need to get that bit of supply. Now, I think it does come as far as Ballinahinch for this area, but it stops there. And then I think it makes its way down then the other network at the other end of the council area down towards Newry. But this sort of whole Lochiel area is left without any supply. And given our proximity to Belfast, we would be ideally placed to have some large factories maybe based in the area. Is there any plans to upgrade that network? And if there is, would Downpatrick be considered as an additional area for it?
We historically... the network has been built based on where the major load blocks are. As you said, we have a substation in Ballinahinch. We have a 110 transmission substation in Ballinahinch, and there's one in Newry as well. All I can say is if there is the potential for large manufacturing industry to come into this part of the province, get that information to us as quickly as possible, because to facilitate the increased load, the increased demand, we have to build the infrastructure to support it. And think of it very simply like a motorway. So we have to build the electric equivalent of a motorway to give you the energy flow down here. Now, whether that's us creating a new 110-33 substation, more 33-11 substations to facilitate that load, but there's a finite capacity in the network at the minute, and to allow for an increased load, we have to increase the available capacity. Whether that's us funding it from the utility regulators' money, or a major manufacturer saying, I want a particular factory in Downpatrick, I want you to build me the network to do it, and that major manufacturer or whatever, he funds it.
With that chicken and egg scenario there, that do you provide it or does the business need it? Could I ask our director to take that on board and make sure that maybe the appropriate departments within council are identifying those businesses, and therefore if they do require additional electric supply, that we can liaise with you to make sure that that's a possibility?
That's fine. No.
Certainly there's people, there's NIE connections, and a business that within NIE that is more than happy to talk to people. And because one of the things I would emphasise as well is the timelines for us to get way leaves and the agreement with landowners are not within our direct control, and that can take, building the line is the quick bit. It's getting the permissions from landowners to put the line on their land can be the slow part of it.
Thank you, Rodney. Thank you, Councillor McGrath. Councillor Kern.
Thank you, Chair. I think you've already answered part of my question there in relation. I was speaking to you before I came in here today.
Yes.
In relation to this supply of power, in my own area, over the last few months, there was a large freeze plant built there, and unfortunately, when they wanted, I think it was. You can correct me if I'm wrong in the terminology here, but they wanted 800. KVAs,
yes.
KVAs, and you could only get them 500 like that there. So there was a delay and even opening that plant. But I think things have been maybe solved out at the present time. But that leads me to have my concern here about it. And you think you answered that when you're talking to Councillor McGrath there, where there is another interested body that might come to that area. And if they were going to come, we might find them that they mightn't, after they knew that you couldn't supply the power to them to operate, then they mightn't come at all. So there is that situation there. We would like to know about power coming to this area here And we're all, every one of us in this council here, no matter what party we belong to, we're all trying to get businesses here to give employment to the area. And we would like to know that, you know, the position to go. But I think you've outlined that to Councillor McGrath now, the procedure that needs to be taken.
Yes. And you have Christine's, the local CRM. So if anybody has a query, you know, about something like that, you know, liaise with Christine, and we'll make sure that somebody from Connections makes contact with yourselves.
Well, I thank you very much for your presentation, and I thank you very much for that assurance, because it does give us, you know, to know that we can work together for the benefit of bringing employment to the area.
Yes, and you know, speaking on behalf of the NIE, that's, you know, hugely important to us. As a guy who used to work for Michelin Tire Company, you know, and the news that just happened to it, you know, I think it's hugely important for Northern Ireland PLC that we, you know, improve the manufacturing and the industry that's in the province, because it's sort of the lifeblood of the.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Kern. Councillor Riley.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed. I was just interested to know, the meter replacement, is that anything to do with the smart meters that have been installed throughout the UK? And the other issue I wanted to know, the interconnector between Scotland and Northern Ireland, how active is it now? And the proposed interconnector with the south, you know, that the, I know there's a lot of controversy in the Republic over the size of the pylons, and there's planning objections going on there. But how far on are those projects? Because I would be concerned that the amount of power we're getting is just not going to be enough if, if we keep developing the way we are. If those two interconnectors aren't in place fairly quick.
Yeah, okay. Taking those in order, I'm just scribbling down. The meter replacement program is separate from the smart metering project.
Good.
We do not have in Northern Ireland as yet any significant smart metering trials. The utility regulator has not given us any monies for smart metering trials. We're going to wait to see what the GBDNOs and ESB networks do in the Republic, to see just what type, make, and what and where we install smart meters. With reference to the Moyle interconnector, it is currently and has been for several years running at half capacity, 250 megawatts. So we're importing 250 megawatts from Scotland, basically 24/7. That Moyle interconnector was initially designed to handle 500 megawatts, and due to a fault in one of the LV cables associated with that, it's been running at half capacity for a number of years now. It's my understanding that Moyle have identified the root cause of that fault and will, during 16-17, will be undertaking a repair that should, all been well, restore Moyle to the full 500 megawatts capability. North-South Interconnector. The utility regulator is on record as late as last month at a presentation in Titanic Quarter saying that, you know, Northern Ireland needs the new North-South Interconnector between the Republic of Ireland ESB networks and the North, the 400 kV. There is a significant level of challenge from landowners and from people in that part of the world that they don't want that interconnector on their land. You know, there's talk about a underground solution which may be five times more expensive. And unfortunately, you know, the customers in Northern Ireland will have to pay for that. So, Northern Ireland PLC needs that North-South interconnector.
Yeah, I appreciate that. In comparison to the Moyle interconnector, what would be the amount of electricity through the North-South
interconnector? It's 2 to 3 times.
More.
So right. If Moyle at full capacity is 500, I think this one's like 1,500 megawatts or something. Right. I can check, but it's a significant amount of energy.
And do you see whenever, if they do get all the planning issues resolved in the south, and an application goes in here, you know, where it comes over the border at County Tyrone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be the same objections up here to them big pylons.
Yes.
I would presume.
Yes.
Does that start all over again? The only reason I'm asking you is, if they don't get it sorted quickly, I can see problems arising.
And
we're not going to have enough energy at times.
And the UER would concur with that. You know. Yeah. No, she's basically said it at that conference in October, that, you know, by 2020, if that interconnector's not built, you know, there is the potential of power cuts in Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Thank you. And could I just, Madam Chair, thank you, because I know there during some windy periods and out there, your men were out and done first-class work in horrendous conditions, so credit where credit's due.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Enright.
Thank you, Chairperson. In report after report, our council area from Strangford Lough to Carlingford Lough, Le Mornes, etc., has been highlighted as the area in Northern Ireland with the best renewable energy resources, be it offshore or wind facing to the south and southwest. We've pretty much the only south facing coast, really, in Northern Ireland. And of course, a tidal. And we do, of course, have some of the leading technologies being developed here with Queen's in the Narrows, where there are some 10 innovative technologies being developed there, and where the Southwest College, working in Ballyhorlan, is piloting an EU-funded energy storage scheme. But in all of that, picking up on what Colin McGrath was saying earlier, we're looking at a situation where the 110 kilovolt network stops north of Newry and stops in Ballinahinch. And so we're left with a situation that really what could be the future of rural diversification of a new industry for us here. A place we have to go, because, as you know, we're no longer talking now about meeting our 40% renewable energy target. The government's now moving on to thinking about the 80% renewable energy target. The state of the network mitigates against this in our area, whereas we do see, like, tens of millions being spent in Antrim. We know there was 30 million announced there the year before last for Tyrone. And we know that substantial upgrades of the grid are going on around Northern Ireland, but for some reason we seem to be a grid upgrade-free zone, despite the fact that every independent study highlights our area as being ideal for that area. And then when you're allied to that, then, we have a horrendous situation in industry, particularly rural industry, but industry right along the coast. I know dairy farms, for instance, one in Killard, that have to use a diesel generator. I know haylage companies that have to pack their haylage using diesel generators. I know a grain mill supplying pig feed into the UK market has to use a diesel generator. I know, Councillor Kern would be familiar with this, for instance, Milligan's Fish Factory, a huge operation in our glass where... They applied to you guys to see if they could turn their steel-reinforced roof south-facing into a large photovoltaic array, and it's directly situated over their cold store. Now, as you know, the ability to store a load in the form of cold or heat or in any other way is a great way of storing energy. And really is part of the future of where we need to be going. But, of course, they couldn't get connection for a substantial photovoltaic array. And there they are, keeping their massive coal store in Ardglass cold by running a diesel generator. The way in which our area is inhibited, and it's not just here, because I've actually heard Glyn talk off and on about how factories in his area are having to operate diesel generators. It's the norm right across our area. So, you know, not only are we being prevented on the foot of not having a decent upgrade to our network from getting into what is the only feasible large-scale employment prospect that we have in the short term ahead of us, but we're also in a situation where our existing businesses who are attempting to export to the world from agricultural or fishing or other purposes cannot get and the electricity they need at the price that they need and have to run diesel generators. So it seems to me that we've got a problem. I know the council is now in charge of the area plan, and I know that the area plan is a statutory footing and requires NIE to engage with us to see what can be done to overcome the inhibition to the growth into renewable energy, and indeed the damage being done to our companies of all kinds right across the area at the moment. So what can you tell us about your commitment to talk to us about our area plan and talk to us about these two huge impediments to economic development in this area?
I can confirm that, you know, NIE Networks will talk to anybody who wants to, you know, improve, increase, expand the infrastructure. As I said earlier, the earlier you talk to us, the more timely that those discussions can be. But at the end of the day, this comes down to money and who's going to fund it. And whether it's the utility regulator that gives us the allowance or where it's a major organisation who wishes to build a factory in a particular area for whatever business reasons or business model they wish to avail of, you know. But I can confirm that NIE will speak to the council or whoever you wish, the manufacturer, the developer or whatever, to ensure that we can deliver what you need in the least cost technically acceptable solution in as quick as timescales as we can deliver it, conscious of the fact that not all is within our gift. Well, you know, I can't talk specifics about a particular site tonight, but if you wish to give us details, you know, either send us an email, give us details, we'll get back to you.
I think that's suffice at this stage. Okay, Councillor Enright. Councillor Hardy, thank you.
All right, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation here this evening. Just a couple of concerns, and one is around the entire grid and network right through the rural areas and that, and the interest there is in renewable energies, particularly solar panels on that, and they're telling them now in the rural areas that you know the grid can't take it. You know, there was actually even a number of people who had paid private companies for give them a deposit to put up their panels and that, and they actually come and give them the money back and said there's an issue here with the grid. They wouldn't let them connect to the grid. Mm-hmm. You know, like as I talk about the targets that's set for renewable energy and that, but we have a network out there that's not fit to take this. And the other issue is that I want to raise with is the cost now to get connected to the electric, and there's a feeling out there that, you know, it's a network that hadn't been well maintained or that, and now when anyone goes to build a house or that, automatically the nearest transformer needs to be renewed and they pay for that, and lanes and all of that. But it used to be where, you know, I think there was at one stage maybe the 30% discount that has been done away with on that, and taking that aside. But I know one person that had made an application for electric and it was in the region of 2,500, and it elapsed over a year of that, the time it took to build the house, and it actually had doubled in that. But when I'd done a bit of inquiry now, a lot of the connections is 10, 15 and £20,000, like. And I know people does need to be aware of this and consider all of that when they're making an application for planning. But it's serious, serious building. You know, there's a lot of people who was down the road, their houses built and then applied and got this whack. It's going to take £15,000 or £20,000 to for this connection. Do you know what? They hadn't allowed for in their mortgage and all of that, but it really is a colossal amount of money, But there is, as I say, repeating myself again, the feeling out there that the network wasn't well maintained over the years, and that people has to pay for this now when they're looking connection for to the board.
I can concur, you know, confirm that we have spent hundreds of millions of pounds since privatisation maintaining the network. And right across Northern Ireland, the difference has been that when that network was first built, you know, rural electrification for Northern Ireland started in the 50s and 60s. When that network was built, you know, there wasn't the load in that area. There wasn't all the distributed generation that there is now. We've spent hundreds of millions. The really costs of, as I said earlier, we have to provide the least cost technically acceptable solution to anybody who asks for a connection to our network. We have a statement of connection charges that's agreed once a year, updated once a year, and agreed with the utility regulator, who basically signs off that that's what we can charge for work on our network if somebody comes asking for it. So, you know, that's signed off by the UR, and that's what we apply based on what they sign off. Come back to my first point I've raised earlier. You know, new house in the country, new bungalow, you know, talk to us as soon as you can so that we can give the various options, you know, because there may be more than one option of getting new supply. But again, that goes back to, we don't own the land that overhead net. You know, the shortest possible route, there may not be way leaves granted to give you the shortest possible route, which ultimately gives you the cheapest price, and that's not within NIE Network's gift. You know, so I understand and appreciate, you know, your valid points raised, but they're not all within NIE Network's gift to resolve, unfortunately. Yes, but if the load has increased and, you know, we don't get funding for that from the utility regulator, you know.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And thank you, Rodney and Christine, for coming tonight. I suppose my concerns have already been expressed by other councillors here tonight. Councillor Riley, I know, raised the point about the interconnectors, and certainly I see that as needing to progress very rapidly indeed. And also Councillor Enright mentioned about the renewable energy targets, and I mean, it is government policy, and yet what we discover is that our grid is at its maximum capacity in this area, and there's high levels of additional capacity there from renewable energy, which, due to the grid limitations, we just can't actually get it connected. And it's not only wind turbines, it's probably maybe stopping the development of AD plant as well. So, you know, if we're going to realise the renewable energy target, definitely there's serious infrastructure problems needed to be corrected on the grid. I know your concern is that where does the cost come from? We certainly don't want it to be passed on to the customers, whether domestic or industrial, because none of those two customers can't take any additional charges. And you mentioned yourself, Rodney, I know about Michelin and the fact that the energy costs there are percentage, maybe 13% higher than other places that are serving similar companies. So, you know, we obviously have to keep, obviously has to be funding from somewhere. But I'm just wondering, on the point of view, I know at times maybe the grid can be underutilised as well. And I'm just wondering, what point of view of with the NIE, are they doing any R&D work in connection with intelligent energy systems with other bodies to try and get round the incapacity of the grid in places, looking at things like energy storage, and matching supply and demand across the network, etc., to try and arrive at viable solutions in the lack of proper grid infrastructure.
Yes, I've had a comment. We're currently in the midst of testing a managed connection pilot that will allow us to get more generation onto the distribution network in a managed fashion. And that work's ongoing. One of the guys that works with me is meeting later on this month with the contractor and the technical provider of that solution to see, A, if it will work. We think it will. And B, what percentage improvement and increased capacity it will give us within that surrogate and for those affected wind turbines. So that's ongoing. The thing about connection of generators and AD plants, those guys who got in early and got the wind farm up, got their AD plant up, the network had the capacity to take that increased generation with little or no increased cost or work that needed to be done. So those farmers, those developers got a quote which was significantly less than the cost of somebody who's trying to get an AD plant or a wind turbine onto a surrogate if there are 10 or 12 other turbines already on that surrogate. Because we have a responsibility to maintain and operate the network safely. Now, or worse fear, a wind turbine produces too much energy, the conductors actually burn down, fall out, and fall. No. Or, as the current flow increases in the conductors, the conductors go out of regulation and they drop lower. So it may still be in the air, but instead of having statutory ground clearances, if we don't manage that and operate that network sufficiently well, we go outside statutory ground clearances, which creates dangers to people operating in fields, driving tractors, etc., etc. So it's something we take very seriously, and we have to maintain the integrity of our network. But, if you're in a surrogate that's maximum capacity, yes, you could connect a new generator to that surrogate, but you might have to rebuild the conductor on that surrogate from its current cross-sectional area to something that may be 2-3 times the size of it. Now, that can be done, but it may cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. And as you said, it's not up to us. The utility regulator tells us where to put those costs. Now, if the developer doesn't pay for them, then they go against everybody in this room and you pay it on your domestic bill. Now, currently that's not the case.
Okay, Councillor Craig. Councillor McAteer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation, certainly. My issue, again, I think it's reflective of what Councillor Hardy said, certainly it's about the exorbitant prices for connections. And I think that you're now you're not a public body anymore, private company. You can see that, in my opinion, the way the prices have gone up. And I know we had certainly one case where, I had somebody price the cost you folk were charging for digging and backfilling. It was roughly twice the price that someone else could do it. So I do think there's certainly room there for certainly inquiry into some of the costs associated with getting supply to people. So that's really a statement. But what I ask, would you, again, in rural areas, when you're looking at, we are some of us here are members of the planning committee, for example, and just by the very nature of planning, you are putting some rural houses, maybe by the type of planning regulations, quite a considerable distance away from maybe another group of houses, or something along those lines. And that's where the high cost comes in to get electricity to them. That's a real fact of living in the countryside. So would you have ever considered or consider some sort of even phased payments of those, like when someone's faced with, you know, £20,000 or £30,000 of a bill that they were never ever dreamt of? I know you said contact them, you know, but would you ever consider that? And you did say earlier on it's the cheapest quote you will get. Who else would you get
it? The least cost technically acceptable quote that we have to prove to the regulator that what we're offering you or offering any customer is the least cost solution that will provide them with
the. But where's the competition? You know, who else could they get a quote from?
Well,
and say, so just maybe take, because this lady will go off and I'll get speaking. I mean, I do think you have quite a monopoly on the supply of it. The other thing is, again, on three-phase, I guess it's three-phase lines, isn't it? It's the next grade up, isn't it?
Yes.
There seems to be a deficit of those, you know, for even small light industry or anything greater than a standard, you know, large house in the countryside, again, in rural area. Predominantly, this all, a lot of these are rural problems. You know, would you consider, at the end of the day, voluntarily coming in and identifying areas where you will actually put those transformers in that they're easily accessed again over a period of time?
We do that based on the, taking your second point, we do that based on if the planning guys within NIE networks, you know, consider that that's the right thing to do, yes. Why there's lots of single-phase overhead network in the rural parts of Northern Ireland is because that historically there wasn't the requirement for three-phase circuits. Single-phase circuits were sufficient. If the loading is such that, and we include it in our price control, that things can be upgraded to three-phase, then that can be done, and done as perhaps as part of RP6. Read the point that one of your colleagues raised about the price differential. It used to be that domestic customers only paid 60% of the cost of any connection, and the NIE funded the 40%. Okay, the UER decided that that would end. Totally, you know, that was a fait accompli. We were told from a particular point, a date and time, I can't remember exactly when it was, maybe 18 months, 2 years ago, that 100%, that 60% charge would be scored out and customers would pay 100% of all connection costs. Pardon? Yes. I can't comment on that because the. Because we have to treat.
I'm even so, I'm just saying here, even if you did it on a phase and it just paid over a number of years. You know, there's better some way to, you know.
We're a commercial organisation, you know. If we pay it, if we agree an arrangement with you, say, to pay it over 3 years, you know, we have to treat everybody the same. So if your neighbour wants it over 4 years, no, we can't do that. And what happens if after 2 years the customer stops paying? What happens then? You know, well, you know, domestic customers, you know, can't get caught off. Yes, back in the day, yeah. Things have changed. Well, you mentioned the point, competition. You know, competition, the UR has instructed and has basically said that competition and new connections will be coming into Northern Ireland in 2016. Now, the point of final connection to our network, but if you need or if a customer needs overhead line built or cable built, they can get quotes from other suitably authorised and trained organisations as well as Northern Ireland Electricity Networks. So, from 2016 on a phased approach. Joe. And that's entirely within your right.
Okay, thank you, Councillor McAteer. Councillor McKay.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for your presentation. Again, on the renewables side of things, the more councillors speak, the more you get bits of answers. But I'm just wondering, you talk about infrastructure maybe not able to support the wind turbine, for example, and other renewables. I often ask a question and get the opportunity, maybe you'll be able to answer. Has there been a reduction in fossil fuels which supplies the big generators in Belfast, wherever it works from? I do know there's hundreds of thousands of tonnes of coal be shipped in to supply those. Has there been a reduction in that electricity to allow, for example, green energy? I always believe it's a reduction in the fossil fuel side of things. It would then free up and ease up pressure on the wind turbines, that there would be enough support, there would be enough infrastructure there to support the wind turbines. It's more like a balancing act, where one would be with just... That's just question one. And question two, I'm sure you realise that these people, and I'm saying this here, and I'm not taking sides on turbines or anything, I'm saying it generally, that Northern Ireland is apparently the only place in the UK where the electricity companies do not come out on site in advance of a planning application going in. In other parts of the UK, NIE or whoever it is responsible comes out, they view the site, they say that site is suitable or it's unsuitable or it's too far for supplies or whatever, and a general cost of what it's going to take. Where here, the applicant spends thousands of pounds in their applications, and if they are acceptable and agreeable to it, then they're hit with this extortionate amount of money for NIE, maybe transformer, whatever else goes. I know there's one ongoing at the minute, and there's hundreds of thousands of pounds pumped into it. So I'm just saying, do you see the time when you'll be able to come out prior to an application going in and give your pennies worth to say, no, you're wasting your time going to this, it's not going to work? A third simple one question is Newry Street in Kilkeel, between the Moore and Presbyterian Church and the Newry Street car park, there's a transformer which there was a meeting held on site, and the transformer is still in Moore and Presbyterian Church ground. It was to be moved over the wall to the probably now council car park. Any word of it going ahead, or what's the position there? Thank you.
On your last one, I don't know the details of that one, but I'll make a point here and we'll get back to you. That was Moore and Presbyterian Church grounds transformer. Yeah. Has it been moved? We'll get back.
Christine. Apparently it's quite a sizable one, you know.
Yeah, Christine, we'll dig down into that. And Christine, if you can give us your contact details, we'll get Christine to email you after that. Okay. Read your first point about generation. The existing coal-fired power stations are all sitting in the east and north of the province, and they feed directly out onto the transmission network. Okay. Distributed generation, by its very nature, rather than feeding straight out onto the distribution network, or feeding onto the transmission network, the 275 and 110 kV network, is feeding out onto 11 kV rural lines that were originally built in the 60s, have been maintained since then, but were based on the load that was there and is currently there before all the generation came. And the capacity of those lines on the 11 kV network has been used up in some areas, so it's not possible to get that generation at distribution voltages out to where it's needed, which may be in the east of the province, because most of that distributed generation is in the northwest, and you've talked about in the southeast here. The coal-fired thermal plant has all that generation. It's feeding direct out onto the transmission network, and then it goes right across Northern Ireland. And we don't have the capacity problems there. Your second question about on-site assessment of customers' applications. We would do that for a number of jobs. For some, what we think are simple jobs, we will do desktop quotations. We're using our geographical information systems and our maps and our knowledge of where all our infrastructure is. Based on the plans that a customer puts forward to us, we will give him give that customer an indicative quote as to what we think the cost will be, subject to getting the way leaves that we know. Again, the least cost technically acceptable solution, subject to getting the way leaves. If it turns out that, for whatever reason, the way leaves that we initially assumed can't be achieved, but by whatever reason, which is outside our control, you know, then that cost may be significantly increased.
And would you do this for every applicant who would ask you to come out and investigate the site?
Yeah, like I have numerous examples of going out on site. In a previous life, I remember doing that myself. You know, talking to the landowners, talking to people wanting to buy farmers who a son bought one a house on the land, and you know, that would be normal.
And particularly wind turbines, that's sort of bigger thing. Yeah,
wind turbines definitely, because of the connection and the earthing requirements for wind turbines. Now, if we know that part of the network is totally full up and there's no capacity there, you know, there will be a telephone conversation, you know, and it might be that yes, you can connect there, but it might cost you £500,000.
Yeah.
You know, but that's
okay,
because we have to maintain the integrity of the network.
Thank you, Councillor McKay. Councillor Burns. You're like a naughty schoolboy tonight. Can you behave?
He drags me down.
He's a bad influence.
You just only notice tonight because there's very little here. Thanks for the presentation. I have to say from the outset, I'm an ex-employee and I have very heartfelt views myself on why we are in the situation that we are. I believe when the privatisation happened and the government contracts were handed out, they were extremely generous. And that money that should have been spent on infrastructure upgrade at that stage was given out to NIE PLC shareholders through dividends. I think we're reaping the effects of that now in terms of our infrastructure is over capacity. But my questions are simple. I think you mentioned or made reference to in the presentation that we have an unusually high amount of overhead line cable. My understanding of overhead line cable is it is both the least safe way of providing electricity from one point to the other, and it's much safer to bury it under the ground. And the reason why it's done is simply due to cost. Would it be fair to say that would be an indictment of previous lack of money being put into it? Or is there any other reason why we have so much overhead cable compared to anywhere else? And secondly, I'd like to know, I know Councillor Riley touched on smart meters, but on a generalisation, you spend a lot of money reading meters. Is there any plans afoot or demos, or have you done any work with AMR systems, be they walk-by, drive-by, or fully integrated systems for metering, particularly in built-up areas where you have congestion of meters that it's more feasible to do so rather than the rural areas?
Re, your first point, overhead networks. Yeah, we're 3.5 times the amount of overhead compared to your average DNO. One of the main reasons for that is the fact that the amount of single dwellings in Northern Ireland is significantly higher than across the water in GB. You know, in England, it's mainly hamlets and villages, and there's not so much single dwellings in the middle of the country that requires 8 feet overhead line to get to it. Or so by the very nature of the geography and the housing distribution across Northern Ireland, the network built up along those lines. With reference to, you know, if you have a fault in an overhead network, it's much easier to find it, and it's quicker to find it. If you put everything underground, A, it can be 3, 4, 5 times more expensive to install it in the ground. If you have a fault, it will take you significantly longer, one, to find that fault, and two, to fix that fault. And the cost of installing, the UR is on record as saying that the 400 kV interconnector, the new one that we need to build between the north and south, will be in the order of 5 times more expensive than an equivalent capacity overhead line version. Now, you know, somebody will have to pay if it goes down the underground route. Somebody, and it'll be the customers in Northern Ireland, I would have thought, will have to pay 5 times the price. You know, that's the decision that I don't have to make, thank goodness. The utility regulator will have to make that call. Yeah. Smart meters, yes, we've done some pilots, but the utility regulator is of the opinion that Northern Ireland is, and I'm paraphrasing here, is too small to have its own smart meter in pilot. So we will leverage the findings of the smart meter in pilots that have been done in the GBDNOs and are being done by ESB networks in the Republic. And once they have the output from those findings in those pilot programs, then we will leverage that knowledge, and the UR will work with us and agree what type of smart metering rollout we will put out in Northern Ireland.
So, is there any opportunity to retrofit to existing metering
infrastructure?
No. Water, where you can put a pulse unit onto a water meter and you can use an AMR system?
Yes, you can. You can. For some of our meters, you can do that. And we have a small, as far as I understand, there's a small number of pilots, but we're talking, you know, they're small. I don't know, but we can find that out and get back to you.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Burns.
Chairperson, can I beg your indulgence? One of my most important parts of my question wasn't answered, and I'd just like to clarify what it was. Because
if it's
I think
very
it
brief, yes,
thank you.
Go ahead.
I mean, we all know that the grid was built in an era in the 60s when there were particular views about which areas of Northern Ireland should be developed and which areas wouldn't be developed. And we know that in recent years, Tyrone has had significant upgrades, Derry had significant upgrades, and so did Antrim. 30 million, I think, went into Tyrone. So what it means is that the super councils in these areas can now look forward to much increased rates income. It also means that the people in those areas, that the businesses were setting up, won't face the sort of costs that we face. I mean, I have farmers. I got one farmer presented with a bill for $365,000 to connect his wind turbine. Another bill, a farmer presented with $235,000 to connect his 250-kilovolt wind turbine. These sorts of costs wouldn't be faced by people at that sort of scale in Tyrone or in Derry or places where these investments were made. Now, clearly, your organisation must have gone to the regulator. You must have said, look, Tyrone is an area we need to invest in grid upgrade. Derry is an area we need to invest in grid upgrade. Antrim is an area we need to invest in grid upgrade. Why is it that South Armagh and Down, South Down, is not worthy of a grid upgrade, given the fact it is absolutely clear that we are the best suited part of Northern Ireland for renewable energy, and that, like those other areas in the West, we were subject to many, many decades of discrimination as to where infrastructure should be put. Now, this is a very important point for our area. It's clearly impossible for our farmers to come up with over £200,000 to connect to the network, and it's not acceptable for our businesses to have diesel generators. This sort of situation would not be happening in Tyrone following a £30 million upgrade of their particular grid. How is it you bring these proposals forward to the regulator, and why is it you haven't brought forward such a proposal for our area?
I'm not sure, and I'll have to go back and get the detail on this. You know, there were various proposals put forward for the west of the province, but I can say that every customer is treated equally. So your statement that customers in Tyrone didn't get quotes of 235,000, I don't know. I can't confirm or deny that statement.
We don't have capacity. They don't have to pay for capacity.
There's lots of surrogates in Tyrone in the west of the province that have no more capacity left, because that capacity has all been used up by a number of wind turbines, AD plants, etc., etc. How, you know, I'll go back to their planning guys and we'll ask the question as to what proposals are in place for this part of Northern Ireland, and we can send that in, we can send that in to you, sir. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll need to ask the question back to the ranch, and I'll get back to you.
Okay. I think that concludes the session of questions.
Thank you.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you.
Yous are happy enough?
Yes.
Christine, anything you'd like to add? Okay, councillors, there's quite a list there of questions that Rodney and Christine probably will have to come back to us with additional information. So we look forward to hearing from you in the time ahead. And thank you once again to you both for coming out this evening. Thank you. Thank you, councillors. Good night.